Hysteria is brought to you by Nutrafol. Good hair days do more than we give them credit for. When your hair feels healthy, you show up differently. You feel more confident, more relaxed, and you're not constantly checking the mirror. Nutrafol supports hair health from within and delivers results over time. So your hair becomes something you enjoy, not something you stress about. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand, and it's the number one hair growth supplement brand personally used by dermatologists. Nutrafol's hair growth supplements are peer-reviewed, NSF certified for sport, and clinically tested. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Nutrafol offers multiple formulas for men and women tailored to different life stages like postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors such as plant-based diet, so you get support that's actually right for you. Adding Nutrafol to your daily routine is easy. Order online, no prescription needed, with automated deliveries and free shipping to keep you on track. Plus, with a Nutrafol subscription, you can save up to 20% and get added perks like a free Headspace membership to support your hair health journey. Let your hair become one less thing that's taking up space in your head and see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you visit Nutrafol.com and enter promo code Hysteria10. That's Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com, promo code Hysteria10.
Mom, can you tell me a story?
Sure. Once upon a time, a mom needed a new car.
Was she brave?
She was tired, mostly. But she went to Carvana.com and found a great car at a great price. No secret treasure map required.
Did she have to fight a dragon?
Nope. She bought it 100% online. From her bed, actually.
Was it scary?
Honey, it was as unscary as car buying could be.
Did the car have a sunroof?
It did, actually.
Okay, good story.
Car buying you'll want to tell stories about. Buy your car today on
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
And today we also have joining us the remarkable Francesca Ramsey. Welcome, Francesca.
Yay. Happy to be back.
I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're here for a full episode. I think it's been a few years since you've been for a full episode.
I know.
So I'm going to spring a cold open question on the two of you. Yes. It was a big night for the DSA in New York. Big night.
Yeah.
Zoran Mamdani went 3 for 3 with his endorsed candidates. What do we think Chuck Schumer's having for breakfast today?
Muesli. I was going to say Metamucil. Oh my God, this is not sponsored, but it should be.
You know what? I would 100% accept free Metamucil. Oh, I would read Metamucil ads until the cows come home. 100%.
Oh my God, thank you. I'm so glad to be with my elder millennial contemporaries.
Listen, Gen X is happy to have you.
Today we hear about Alyssa's experience at the Obama Center opening and reflect on the bygone era, look back on the past 4 years since Dobbs was overturned. Oh my God, what is time. And we look into leaked information about the Peter Thiel-founded Secret Dialogue Society. And of course, we wrap up with Sani Petty. Welcome back to Hysteria, the podcast that understands that the answer to why does J.D. Vance have such a difficult time acting like a normal human man is because he's three Peter Thiels in a trench coat. Right?
Valid.
Valid.
Yep. I feel like you're overestimating how many Peters is
You think
there.
There's only two Peters?
Like 1.5.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah, I mean, there's a Peter pun in there somewhere that I'm not going to make, but I'm going to say 1.5.
One
that
and
feels
half.
Legit.
So somewhere in the world, there is a half Peter Thiel walking around. I hate that. Yeah. I hate that. Okay. You know, the reason we're talking about J.D. Vance, as much as I don't really like thinking about him, I want everybody to check out this footage of normal human man J.D. Vance having a normal interaction with his human wife, Usha, on her weekly hostage video. I mean, storytelling podcast. Let's take a look.
Thanks for joining us today, honey.
Of course. Good to see you.
So you're also a big reader. These days, it's mostly kids' books, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
How many books a day do you think you read to our kids?
Well, it depends on whether our kids are in a reading mood or not, as you know. So right now we have three kids. Obviously, we have a fourth on the way, which we're very excited about. But so our 8-year-old likes to read his own stories to himself. And I think our 6-year-old sometimes wants me to read to him, but he's kind of at an age where he likes to read a lot to himself as well. And then our 4-year-old baby girl, she is the big reader, meaning she's the one who always wants me to read her books. So this morning, I think I only read one book to Mirabelle, but normally it's 2 or 3 stories in the morning and then some stories in the evening as well. She really likes to reread her favorite stories. And my view is that once I've read a story for that day, I don't want to read it again or else it gets very boring. So I will always be trying to read new books, and Mira will always be trying to get me to read the same exact story.
Oh my God.
I'm falling asleep.
I know.
The most boring.
Oh my God. This is like watching oatmeal congeal.
He is congealed oatmeal.
Shout out to the turkey baster that has made that fourth pregnancy possible. I don't believe these people have ever slept in the same room.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like Usha recoiled when he did that knee pat. What was that?
I don't know. I mean, look, that was weird.
Yes.
That was weird. Were they in a fight right before the segment?
I don't know. Also, like, why does she have a podcast?
I don't know.
There's no reason for her to have a podcast. But they have been together, whether on television, like TV interviews or that podcast, several times. Usha is not my care or my concern, but she is always recoiling. Mm-hmm. She always looks like she's blinking into the camera to send a message to anyone who will pay attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy because I think, Alyssa, you and I have talked about this before, but it seems like she and JD are trying to like soft launch themselves as America's First Couple.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, I mean, this whole book tour has shown us a softer side of JD Vance. He keeps walking back the incendiary things that he said. He's trying to show us, you know, that he is amenable and he's open to correction, and it just comes across as so disingenuous. We all know what he's doing. He's trying to lay the foundation for what we all believe is the inevitable, which I will not say because the feds are watching. But like, I hate it. I hate it so much. And what I hate even more is that I think people are going to fall for it.
You do.
I do.
Oh, Francesca, I don't. I think the more relatable he tries to be, the more repellent he is.
Yeah.
I hope so, but I guess I've just like lost faith.
Well, I just think of it in contrast to what we saw last week, which we'll get into in a second, where the Obamas opened the Obama Center in Chicago and our very own Alyssa Mastromonaco and half of the crooked media offices were there. I feel like looking at former President Barack Obama and former First Lady Michelle Obama is just kind of a reminder of like, oh, there are people who are good at this.
Yeah.
People who are comfortable in their own skin.
Yes. So, Alyssa, why don't you tell us about the event and the feelings that it brought up, and then we can take a little bath of nostalgia.
Listen, we'll take a little bath. And also, if I get teary-eyed, I apologize. I am both on a lower dose than I should be of my estrogen and also still in my feelings about all this. So
relatable.
I will just say, if you are near Chicago or going to Chicago, visit it. It is not just a museum. I think it's like 18 to 19 acres of parks with barbecues that the Obamas fought the city to be able to have. It has a Chicago Public Library outpost that is darling. It has gardens. It has the most insane playground. It is a very special place. And I feel like it is not as much a tribute to them as it is a tribute to the community that brought them together, and also sort of this manifestation of what Michelle wishes that she had grown up with. Like, if you ever hear Michelle talk about how when she was growing up, she was blocks from where the center is now, but she actually went to a magnet school that was outside of her neighborhood. And so she saw how other kids, like what the parks in other neighborhoods looked like. And she always wondered, like, it's something she carried with her and that she talked about just like a couple days ago, about what it meant to feel like you were less than, like your park, your neighborhood somehow represented that you were less than. And so this is all this like very magical thing to bring the South Side, something that it has always deserved. But there was also something as you're like making your way through this spectacular space. And it is, I mean, look, the $1 billion raised, you can see where the money went. There's no corners cut on this project.
No reflecting pool, peeling paint ribbons coming up here.
Well, funny that you say that, Erin, because as I am walking through, and look, the vibes were 10 out of 10. And it's like when you're at one of these events and, you know, you guys see all the famous people like Oprah and Gail and Tom Hanks and everyone's there. They kind of have to like consort with us. You know, there's no special place for the fancy people. You're like, sorry, Oprah, beep, beep, trying to see my friend Fariel, just trying to get by. And we go in, there was a little champagne. You walk in, you start going through the museum, and I get to the exhibit of the letters that Barack Obama used to get every night as president from the White House Correspondents' Office. They would pick 10 letters from people who wrote in. And many, many mornings you'd come in to a letter with a post-it note on it that says, What can we do? How can we help? And it was a very special thing for all of us. One, it was a lot of extra work, but it was like a really, if you did nothing else that day, there was one letter that you addressed from someone who took the time to write in and tell you about their problem or concern. And as I was standing in front of this exhibit, I started getting text messages about how the actual reflecting pool had started peeling, that the pieces of the floor were coming up. And I was like, how stupid is our timeline? Like, this is the dumbest. I can't believe that this is like breaking news. And it felt like such a far time. You know, as you saw, many people wore tan suits as an homage to, which by the way, I was like, I wore a tan suit. Nobody thought mine was intentional. The only suit I own. You know, there was just, it was a nice nod to a time gone by. There were a lot of tears. There was a lot of like, when you looked around and you saw what people were up to now, you didn't really see what they were up to now. You remembered just a lot of people trying to do good things the best that they could for like all the American people, not just a fraction who they think voted for them. And, you know, and it reminded me at the end of the day when I was walking with Pfeiffer's wife and we were trying to find our way home, a little tipsy. And it reminded me from the final line in Ted Kennedy's speech at the 1980 Democratic Convention. And I'm going to say it, and I'm going to try to say it like I don't think I'm Ted Kennedy. So,
okay,
but
good.
At the end of his speech, he said, "The work goes on, the cause endures, the hope still lives, and the dream shall never die." And I think that that's how it felt being there, that the work goes on. Yeah. We still have hope, but, you know, dream shall never die.
Were your feelings just pure nostalgia and happiness, or was there anything complicated about going back to that time for you?
Well, I mean, there was some personal stuff that was complicated. Like, I was really young when I worked in the White House. I think I was 33 or 34, like, when I walked in the building for the first time. And so I'm a much better person now. Like, I'm a much more well-adjusted person who's not so afraid of failure and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's hard to think back at what a hopeful time it was when we were there and to sort of see what has been the country's reaction since, right? Mm-hmm. It's of course, hard to not think about that.
Yeah. Francesca, how about you? Like, you and I weren't physically there,
yes,
but I'm sure you caught up with the events of the day. They were all over every news station, which was a great break from seeing wall-to-wall Trump stuff. How does it feel to you to revisit the Obama era as though it's an era that is now in a museum?
Yeah, I mean, I have complicated feelings about it because while I still feel a lot of pride about the Obamas and what they meant for this country, it's frustrating to me that seems that people didn't like heed the warnings of the Obama administration that got us into this situation. And I think it's easy to look back on things with rose-colored glasses and not actually acknowledge how we got here, because I think a lot of people would rather say it's like a far-off group of people that got us to Trump, when in reality, it's a lot of your husbands, it's a lot of your friends, you know, and like hard conversations that need to have happened that should have predated this administration didn't happen. And so that was frustrating. I also saw a lot of people being like, why won't Michelle Obama run for president? And it's like, guys, she has told us a bajillion times that she doesn't want to run for president.
Ever.
Ever. And anytime she says something, and like, look, she's very poised and she's very inspiring, but like, it's frustrating. And the thing that it makes me think of is like, everybody wants black women to save them. Mm-hmm. Y'all don't want to listen to us when we're like, hey, this bad thing is happening. Can you fix this? And now here we are. And it's like, save us, Michelle. Mm-hmm. Save us. It's like, you didn't listen the first time around, and she doesn't want to do it. And so, like, that was frustrating. But at the same time, I similarly appreciated that we did have, like, this moment of respite, like, something that we've really been desperately craving and deserving. Mm-hmm. I just wish that we weren't in the situation that we're in, so that, you know, seeing the ceremony does, like, lighten our load for a moment, because it's very short-lived.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alyssa, I wonder if you think that the Obama era was like a one-off and it'll never happen again, or do you really think that like Ted Kennedy's words actually are pretend some future where we can get back what we had in 2008?
I do.
You do?
I don't know when. I don't know when, but I do. You know, I'll tell you, when I was on the Kerry campaign in 2004, I never could have imagined the Obama campaign. I think that that is the thing that gives me hope. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think if we look back, you know, last year I read Abby Phillips' book on Reverend Jesse Jackson. And the fact that Reverend Jackson could keep hope alive all these years, and to watch him, to physically be standing next to him when he saw Barack Obama become president, that arc does give me hope that we haven't seen it, that we have not, we cannot see what's coming yet. But I do think that, like, I hope that mm-hmm. Trump will explode in such spectacular fashion that it will give, you know, the people who we see when his foot is off their neck, they have courage. Bill Cassidy, Tom Tillis, you know, mm-hmm. you can see that they've known all along the difference between right and wrong. They just didn't do anything about it because they were more afraid of Trump and keeping their job. But it doesn't mean that they all along did not know the difference between right and wrong. So that's like a little glimmer of hope.
Yeah. I think the nostalgia of the Obama era is can be a little dangerous, and I'm going to call out fellow white people here because I think that the Obama era for a lot of millennials, especially white millennials, was like 2004 to 2008 was when people first became like aware of yes. politics, and we had George W. Bush as the president. We were like, wait a second, this shit sucks. We don't like this at all. We mobilized for maybe the first time because it was the first time we really were of age to mobilize. And then, you know, Obama historic victory twice. And so we're so excited. We're like, wow, we can do
this. We did it.
We did it. We can do it over and over again. And okay, all done.
Yeah.
Great. Well, mm-hmm. that about fixes it, guys. And I think that it's, I don't want to belittle that because I think it's a natural byproduct of youth and having your first experience in politics or being with politics being that sort of incredible victory. But I do think that it maybe lessened some people's resilience when it comes to setbacks. Like, I think I've been mm-hmm. researching, we're doing a Ronald Reagan episode mm-hmm. of this fucking guy, and I've been reading a ton about Ronald Reagan, and it fucking sucks. I hate him so much. He was a terrible person. But reading about Reagan and the Reagan era and his rise in politics just reminds me of just how willing the assholes are to play the long game.
Yes.
And I think that the Obama era and the sort of, like, collapse of Democrats afterwards and the sort of like lost in the wilderness type thing. Shout out to Jon Favreau's podcast. Mm-hmm. I think that that was maybe a reflection of the fact that building our resilience as a movement of progressives is so important. And conservatives have a resilience and a yeah. stubbornness that we really need to develop.
Well, and I'm going to be paraphrasing things that I've heard other people say, so I'm calling myself out there. But a big part of that, I believe, is that conservatives are primed to have the long goal because their reward yeah. is in heaven. And so, you know, when they are mobilizing on the ground and taking away women's rights, they believe that they are doing it for the promise of what's happening in heaven. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, as liberals, we are, you know, this microwave generation. We have been primed to have Uber Eats here in a minute.
Right.
We've been primed to have Amazon delivery in 2 days. Mm-hmm. And so you see that same sort of, you know, falling apart of like, oh, we lost this election. It didn't work. I'm not going to do it again. I'm done. Rather than saying like, this is a long haul. Mm-hmm. It's not just an every 4 years thing. You need to be involved in the local level. There are lots of ways that you can get involved. You know, we've seen recently someone who I will not name say that he's going to storm out of Los Angeles if he doesn't win. It's like, okay, but that is, who was that?
Who said that?
I hope he runs for the hills. Yeah. All I will say is that, like, to your earlier point, real change is incremental. Mm-hmm. And what's hard to acknowledge and accept, and something that, like, I've been coming to terms with as I've been getting older, is a lot of the things that I'm working towards, I might not never ever see in my lifetime, mm-hmm. but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that it's not worth fighting for. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's something that we need to help reframe for people who identify as more progressive or left-leaning, that we're doing the right thing to help everybody, not just ourselves. Mm-hmm. And if we don't see the results immediately, it's not worth giving up for.
Well, and what's the, I'm going to butcher it, but it's the saying, rich is the man who will plant the tree he'll never sit beneath.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what it is, you know? And Francesca, Barack Obama would agree with everything you just said.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome. But I think that's the thing. He gives the sweeping speeches, but he's always been like, change is how you show up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and he said it then. He's said it since I know him.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because on one hand, change is incremental until it's not, you know, until there's something seismic that happens. And I think working on the incremental change equips us with the ability to rock with whatever giant change happens. And I think another thing to note is that democracy is a pain in the ass. Like, if you truly want to have a say in how your country is run, how your locality is run, how your state's run, how your school is run, you have to
It's annoying.
It's annoying. Yeah, you have to go to things you don't want to go to. You have to do things you don't want to do. You have to hang out with people who kind of annoy you. You have to be like, I think that there's a temptation right now in this current political moment. People who are pro whatever Donald Trump is doing, the power grab. I think people just want to sit back and be like, you know what? A totalitarian can just make all these decisions for me. I'm tired of making decisions for myself. And the thing is, democracy as America was envisioned is just constant engagement and decision making. And I think it's easy to feel overstimulated right now because there's so many other things that are pulling our attention than the work of democracy. But I feel like that should maybe move up people's list of priorities, like the work of democracy. And I'm not like saying I'm amazing and I'm doing a great job. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just reflecting.
But I think you're also doing what you can. And I think that that's really important to your point about it feels really overwhelming. I saw a really great post. I think it was on Blue Sky, whatever. But it was talking about the idea of like pick one cause that's important to you and use that as your barometer of like, here's where I'm going to donate. Here's where I'm going to show up. I'm going to talk to my neighbor about this thing. Because when you look at everything happening in totality, it's really overwhelming. And I maintain that that's the goal, right? Like the flood the zone of it all, where there's just too many things to keep up with.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you can pick one issue that is near and dear to your heart, then at least you know you are helping move the needle in the right direction. It's the same way that like if you decide that you want to start working out, you shouldn't throw everything in your fridge out and
be
like, I'm going to start, you know, counting calories tomorrow. I'm going to start, you know, running marathons. It's like, no, you don't run a marathon overnight. You start training for it and you spend time. And then if you don't get the time that you want. Wait, this analogy is really good. Okay, wait a second. In the middle of it, I realized how good it was. If you suck on that first marathon, you train again and you try to beat your time and you make little adjustments. I think it's the same way when it comes to how we approach democracy.
Mm-hmm. Or if you're Paul Ryan, you lie about your time. That is my favorite, like out of all of the Paul Ryan facts that have just like slid off my smoothing brain, the fact that he lied about his marathon time is very funny. He lied about if runners don't forget their PRs, they don't forget their best times. It's like drilled into your head. And so the fact that he's like, oh yeah, I ran in like 3.5 hours. It's like, no, you didn't, dude. You didn't. Anyway, great analogy, Francesca.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Alyssa, one lighter question to wrap up this segment before we throw to a quick break. So there was a lot of like star-studded performances at this. Who was the best performance, in your opinion, the most moving performance? And the second part of that question is, did you have any celebrity run-ins besides almost bumping into Oprah that you think were noteworthy?
So best performance, I thought, was Common and John Legend doing Glory. That was
John Legend is one of the best performers I've ever seen in my life.
He's so excellent. And it's like the thing is like you run into these people and everyone's like, oh, John, you've met Alyssa before. And he's like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, I'm the one who got your piano to Iowa in 07. You know what I mean? I'm just like, that's all you need to know. But he was great. When we went to go take a picture in the Oval, like behind the desk, we were allowed to get behind the desk and take a picture. And I was with David Plouffe and Juliana Smoot. And we didn't realize that Christina Aguilera was in the Oval.
Is it because she's so tiny?
Okay. Yeah, she's so tiny. But you guys, I was high on life. Okay. I was so out of control. I was like running around with Plouffe and Smoot. We were like, oh my God, we're going to take a picture. And someone said, do you want a selfie with Christina? And I yelped out no. And I didn't mean it like that. I just was like, oh, I was trying to not be someone who was glomming onto her moment. That was my thing. She was in there having her like, she was behind the desk. That's what I thought, but it came out so fucking weird.
No.
It came out so weird. She walked by and went, no. So I think we're not friends, even though I really did not mean to throw any shade. And so, Aaron, I thought that the bros had told you that story because it made the rounds pretty quickly. They're like, did you hear what Alyssa did to Christina Aguilera? I was like, I didn't do anything.
If it makes you feel better, you could have really flubbed. Like, you could have caught a genie in a bottle or something. And like,
I could have, right? And then she would have been like, ugh. Yeah, no.
So it could have been worse.
No, I was like, no, because I was just with my two pals. And it was like, girl, enjoy your moment. We're enjoying ours. Instead, it came out way crooked.
Okay, the Regina George of the White House, Alyssa Mastromonaco. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria. Hysteria is brought to you by Smalls. My cat ate Smalls for many, many years, and it was an important part of her nourishment and health for so long. A balanced diet leads to less shedding, fewer hairballs, and a more silky shine. My cat lived to Methuselah cat age. She was 21 years old. She was my companion for 19 years. And I think part of that reason was because I fed her better food than I personally ate sometimes, including Smalls. I would be just like scraping the bottom of a takeout thing in my empty fridge in Chicago, and she would be eating like gourmet food. And that continued into my middle age when she came with me to LA and started eating Smalls. Smalls fresh cat food is protein-packed recipes made with preservative-free 100% human-grade ingredients you'd find in your fridge, and it's delivered right to your door. Their gently cooked recipe is made without preservatives, and most of the nutrients are digestible, so less junk comes out the other end. That means less stinky poops. Smalls cat food is high protein that equals strong bones and toned muscles. Cats use protein as their main energy source. More protein means more fuel and sustained energy. After switching to Smalls, 88% of cat owners reported overall health improvements. Are you spooked by commitment? You can try Smalls risk-free. They'll refund you if your cat won't eat their food. So stop serving your little carnivore a bowl of processed shortcuts. For a limited time, because you are a Hysteria listener, get 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/hysteria. That's 60% off your first order, plus free shipping and free treats for life when you head to smalls.com/hysteria. This episode is brought to you by Alloy Health. Let's be honest, aging can come with some unwelcome changes. Sleep disruptions, hot flashes, brain fog, weight gain, and decreased libido can hit us hard. Menopause is inevitable, but it's also treatable. Almost half of women go 3 or more years before seeking relief from menopausal or perimenopausal symptoms. Most don't know where to go for a solution. That's where Alloy comes in. Alloy is a digital health platform that connects you with a menopause specialized doctor to help you feel and look your best in midlife. Your doctor will help you find the best, safe, science-backed treatments for your symptoms, skin, hair, weight, and sexual wellness delivered to your door. Everything is done online from the comfort of your home, no waiting for an appointment or in line at the pharmacy. Alloy is fast, accessible, and their treatments actually work. Here's how it works. Alloy solutions are available by prescription, so you need to complete an intake form. Then you'll be matched with a menopause specialized physician who will create a personalized treatment plan tailored to your specific needs. Plus, you'll have unlimited access to your doctor, so you can message them anytime. Once approved, Alloy ships your prescription directly to your door with automatic refills. I first learned about Alloy from Alyssa. She has been a client for 2 years and absolutely raves about it. She wanted to make sure you all knew her favorite is their M4 face cream, an estrogen-powered anti-aging cream that hydrates, restores elasticity, and rebuilds collagen. Join 95% of women who tried Alloy and saw relief in the first 2 weeks. Head to myalloy.com and use the code Hysteria and tell them all about your symptoms, and you'll get a fully customized treatment plan and unlimited messaging with your doctor. Plus, you'll get $20 off your first order today. Head to myalloy.com and use code Hysteria to get $20 off your first order. And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who wish Caroline Leavitt a cold welcome back from maternity leave. Yeah, she has. I feel like she's only been gone a couple months.
She's back. She's only gone 2 months.
Yeah, but I thought they were a pro-family party. Isn't that – I hate to – I understand that most people's circumstances in the U.S. do not enable them to take extended maternity leave, but I don't know. If you're the party that's like, have babies you can't afford, have them young, have tons of them, pop them out.
And I'd like to say, if memory serves, her status at the White House is an assistant to the president, and an assistant to the president had full maternity leave,
yeah,
as I recall.
It's like,
so look, she could have done more.
There are other interchangeable blondes who can lie for the president, I believe.
But it goes to show you her narcissism. They can't do it without me. Yeah. Girl, everyone's replaceable.
Yeah. Well, now she's free to get more lip injections without people being like, wait a minute, you're not supposed to get lip injections when you're pregnant.
Yeah, and her body, did. Her choice, yeah, right?
Right. Oh, my God. Okay, well, we're meow, cat sound. But we're going to talk about something related to pregnancy. This is the day we're recording this episode is the exact 4-year anniversary of the Dobbs decision, which was the Supreme Court decision that overturned Roe v. Wade and left abortion regulation up to the states. In those 4 years, 13 states have implemented total abortion bans. 28 states have maintained gestational limits on abortion care. According to the Institute for Women's Policy Research Analysis, the annual economic cost of state-level restrictions and the absence of federal protection adds more than $140 billion nationwide to earnings losses among women ages 15 to 44. The research also found that maternal deaths in abortion-restricted states are 62% higher than in states with access. If you've been listening to Hysteria all along, you've heard us harp on this endlessly, but it's because the saga of trigger laws and abortion restrictions and mifepristone bans and telehealth versus shield laws, it's just endless. However, I do want to point this out. Despite all of these abortion restrictions, despite Dobbs, in the years since the ruling came down, abortions have gone up in the states, significantly up. Because it turns out that abortion restrictions adversely impact the ability of maternity care or the accessibility of maternity care. And so there are women who maybe would be like, yeah, I will have a baby if I know I can access all of these things that I need to access, but instead are deciding, actually, no, I don't want to risk having to bleed out in an ER.
Yeah.
Well, the hospital debates whether or not the doctors are going to get thrown in jail. So anyway, abortion continues to be a bit of a wedge issue. Gallup released a poll last week tracking values and beliefs, and they found 48% of Americans would prefer abortion to be legal in all or most circumstances, while 49% prefer it to be illegal in most cases. So it's a 50-50 issue. I feel like
that sounds weird.
That sounds like a weird number.
Yeah, I always wonder, like, who's being polled. I've never been polled in my life. Nobody has ever asked me to weigh in on anything.
Ever. And everything you ever see is that 2/3 of Americans support some access to abortion.
I think it's probably a wording issue because when you do polls, a lot depends on like how you phrase the question.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of Americans conflate the idea of elective abortion versus abortions that occur for other reasons.
Sure. Right.
So if you have like a miscarriage and you have to have a DNC, that's an abortion. The procedure that the doctor has to perform on you is identical to the procedure that they would perform on somebody who walked in and being like, just not wanting to be pregnant. Like, not that there's anything wrong with that either, but it's the same procedure. And so I don't think people can't wrap their heads around the fact that it doesn't really matter why a woman is getting it.
Right.
She's getting it. The same procedure regardless. So,
well, and ironically, we had an example of that this very week with a pro-life Republican from my home state of Florida, Kat Kamick. She revealed on a podcast that she had an ectopic pregnancy and that the doctors were concerned about giving her an abortion because of Florida's restrictive laws around when you're allowed to have an abortion. And so, again, to your point, a lot of people don't understand this, including the people who are pro-life and are pushing these laws. And it's just really ironic and telling that she had this moment where she was really worried that her life might end. And she still is blaming.
Oh, God.
She's still blaming Democrats and pro-choice activists for confusing people and spreading misinformation and unnecessary fear because she was at 5 weeks and the Florida law is the Heartbeat Protection Act prohibits abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. So there was some confusion because, like, they were cutting it close in that respect. Mm-hmm. And instead of actually acknowledging that she has had firsthand, made this situation that she was in where she almost died, she's breaking down in tears on this podcast. She's still doubling down and saying, well, I'm more pro-life than ever. I'm still more about women. And again, I think it's really important for people to understand that this is healthcare, like whatever your religious beliefs are, they're your religious beliefs. But women should have access to abortion if it's a quote unquote frivolous reason or a life-saving reason. And there's a lot of women and families who want to have children and are in these situations where they have to make these difficult choices in mm-hmm. order to save their life. Mm-hmm. And they should not be in a position where they are worried about possibly dying mm-hmm. or becoming, on life support the same way that they did with Adriana mm-hmm. Smith, where mm-hmm. it's like, we are so determined to save the life of this baby that we are willing to totally disregard the person who's carrying it.
Mm-hmm. And just to remind our listeners, Adriana Smith was a woman in Georgia, correct?
Yes. She was a brain dead pregnant woman who was kept mm-hmm. alive by ventilators under Georgia's abortion law. Mm-hmm. And the baby was delivered by C-section almost a year ago, June 13th, 2025. The baby was premature at just 1 pound and 13 ounces. Oh. And Adriana's family has been really pushing to have justice for her because they didn't have a say.
Right.
They had to
walk. It was against their will.
It was totally against their will. And it cannot be, we can't ignore the fact that this was also a Black woman, right? And when we talk about who suffers, when we talk about reproductive access, unfortunately, it's Black and brown women oftentimes. Mm-hmm. And I really truly believe that they used her to try and, push this narrative about like, oh, we're so pro-life or whatever, while totally disregarding her family. Mm-hmm. And they had to watch her deteriorate, and that's the memory that they have of their daughter. Mm-hmm. And this baby is no doubt going to have complications for the rest of his life. Mm-hmm. And we know that our nation does not provide support to parents mm-hmm. with disabled children. Mm-hmm. So it's this, calling themselves pro-life is totally a misnomer. They are pro-birth. They do not care about children, who don't have access to good food or education or childcare. They don't care about any of those things. They are just trying to pump more babies into the world, mm-hmm. to shuffle them into the school to prison pipeline, mm-hmm. in order to combat this idea that like we need more white babies or whatever it may be. And so it's really frustrating that there is so much misinformation around this healthcare access that everyone deserves to have a right to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Kat Kamik thing is particularly vexing. The fact that the point was wrapped up for her and mm-hmm. delivered
and she refused.
On a silver platter. Yes. And she's like, where's my point? I don't understand the point.
And she knew she messed up because she asked them to take that clip down. She was crying and she asked them, and look, and no shade, she has every right to be emotional, but the fact that she knew that it was going to make her look bad, mm-hmm. that she was getting emotional, that she could not even for 1 second empathize with the fact that she is not the only woman that has been in this position mm-hmm. and that she wanted to have that baby and, through no fault of her own, needed a DNC.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's... It's crazy the way that the point is missed. I feel as though it feels a little bit like yelling at a wall. Alyssa, I'm sure you've experienced this as well, because all of the pro-life like hobby horses, they'll bring them up, and there's always a response that is based in facts and logic. And I feel like the pro-life argument is based on a fantasy of what they wish pregnancy was. It's pregnancy fanfic. It's not real. You can't.
As far as I'm concerned, it's a pyramid scheme. Yeah. They're always, and like, no shit.
It is an MLM.
You have a kid. I've said this many times before. They're always trying to convince you to join. And then like, and bring your friends. We can do it together. It'll be super fun. And then as soon as you have the kid, they leave. It's like those ugly leggings that everybody was pushing out of their spare bedroom. LuLaRoe, yeah. Last time I was here, I mentioned the Cutco knives, and I just want to apologize to the Hysteria audience. There were a number of people in the comments saying that those knives were actually incredible, and I used that as an analogy when talking about AI, so I threw LuLaRoe under the bus this time.
Okay, I feel like that's more fair.
Yes.
Alyssa, has your perspective changed since the decision in 2022? Like, could you imagine that this is where we would be right now with, like, a debate about the legality of mifepristone?
We always knew they were going to do that.
Yeah.
Right? We always knew that this was, you know, 20 years of seating local judges and building up to this moment. And, like, we knew that this was going to happen. The thing that I was not prepared for was, okay, so I think an example is, do you remember when Ohio passed issue one, which was the constitutional amendment protecting the right to abortion in the state of Ohio? It passed overwhelmingly, like something between like 57 and 60%. Mm-hmm. Within a few weeks, the Secretary of State, a Republican, was bringing lawsuits about why it was not legal, what had passed. And so the thing that I did find confounding and troubling is that it is ignoring the will of the people. Mm-hmm. This was a vote that was cast by people, a fair and free election, and they voted to enshrine the right to abortion into their constitution. And to me, that was like the one thing I couldn't have imagined them doing. Mm-hmm. Like really? This, like, how, if I'm a Republican person and I voted to enshrine it and then they're trying to reverse it, like, how am I for that? Do mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, that's the thing I couldn't really
I'm going to dust off a really old movie reference, so apologies in advance.
Oh, let's do it.
Isn't there a scene in The Waterboy that Adam Sandler
not
movie?
Not what I thought you were going to say.
That's not where I thought we were going.
It's in Forrest Gump, even older.
Okay.
In Forrest Gump, where Forrest does not understand the rules of football, and he just takes the ball and runs and runs and runs.
Yes.
I feel like that's Republicans with laws. They just, like, don't – they're not – it's like, okay, but the rules are you have to stop running, and they're just running down into the locker room with the football. Like, yeah. Forrest Gump, not understanding.
Since you just said Forrest Gump, can I tell you guys the funniest thing I saw the other day? Total swerve.
Yeah, tell me.
So in Forrest Gump, there's a scene where Jenny is walking through the reflecting pool. And they're like, well, in Trump's America, if Jenny went into the reflecting pool, that would have killed her before AIDS ever did.
Oh, my God. That is a rough joke, but probably true. While we're hoping to walk things back to a time when we had more protection, some women are willing to give up everything. Even their right to vote, to ban abortions. Now let's watch this clip from the TPUSA, which does not stand for Toilet Paper USA Summit. Let's listen.
I believe that it should be a one household voting system. Now, is that a hill I'm going to die on and run for office and try to complete? No.
Her argument is that when women vote, the outcome tends to be more liberal, and she wants a conservative America.
A hypothetical trade-off some women here are open to.
As a Christian woman who has a very healthy connection with my husband, I vote the same way he does. So honestly, I would be okay with giving up my right to vote.
Okay. The woman in the glasses, she could have spent like 1 week in the Orange is the New Black writers room. And I have an idea of where that would go.
I think it's interesting that they are just saying it so plainly. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the one house vote. You know, that's like been the line that they've been pushing. Mm-hmm, but the reality is when women are allowed to vote, they want rights. Like, guys, did you not read up on the talking points? Like, you just said it plainly.
Yeah. Why does your argument suck? Like, that's the issue. It's not we need to keep women from voting. It's like maybe you can make your ideology more appealing to women so that they choose it. But
my favorite part is that as that clip goes on, the older and older the women get, they're like, I'm going to keep my vote, thanks.
I mean, and I will say, like, selfishly, I did pause to zoom in. I didn't see one black girl in the crowd. So you know what? I'm taking that as a win. We were not at that conference. We will keep our right to vote. Our ancestors died for it. I'm actually going to keep my right to vote. And again, it's really telling that it is the younger women, because a lot of them don't know their history.
Yeah.
And I think this is a systemic issue in respect to the fact that, you know, our right to vote was hard fought and won, and it has a trickle down effect in every area of our life. It's not going to stop there. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I'm going to give up my right to vote, and then it's going to turn into what you're allowed to wear, where you're allowed to be. And I think it's really easy for influencers who have lots of money to say those things, who are not actually going to suffer the consequences while they cosplay trad wives and they have, you know, they have healthcare and they have a, you know, someone helping them with childcare and all of
this. And a Hill House dress.
And also, like, why are you on a stage, mama? Aren't you supposed to be at home in a kitchen being quiet? Like, you're not actually living the values that you are preaching to us. You're a CEO, you're a girl boss, and yet you want everybody else to not have rights and to support their husband and not have a job. Like, it's so backwards.
Well, it's like, have you guys seen the thing on TikTok? I dare you to find a middle-aged
Jessica Valenti.
Yes, Jess Valenti. And it was, and I was like, oh, and that you can't find. There are no 60-year-old trad wives.
No, and a lot of people, that was so brilliant. And I know she's a friend of the show. I'm a big fan of hers. She had a number of people stitch that video and respond with comments and say, I was a trad wife.
Yes, that's
and now
what I was seeing.
How old I am, and here's what actually happens when you don't have a job. And again, it is so telling that it is a lot of these young women saying this, and now I'm really feeling the 40-something and the divorcee in me, where I'm looking at these women and I'm saying, you think that this is going to work out now, but the adage that I keep thinking about when I got divorced, if you want to know who you married, get a divorce. You are going to find out, and by that point, it might be too late.
Yeah.
And you might not. You know, it seems luxurious now, but if you've never had a bank account, if you don't have any work experience, you know, like, you are going to be in a terrible situation that you thought was profitable and cool and looked great on Instagram, but the consequences are going to come for you whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, I also think that this desire to have their opinions subjugated to their husbands, I think it naturally flows from seeing their bodies as subjugated to their husbands. If you believe that, like, your husband should have sexual access to you on demand and that you should give him unfettered access to your reproductive capacity, which is what pro-lifers believe, then I think it just follows that, of course, you think, like, then, of course, why do I need to make any decisions? All of the decisions should be made for me. I should be like a fancy pet that menstruates, you know, like, that living in my own home. I know, but it's true. I think that it's all of these things are connected, and it's important for us to analyze the trad wife trend among young women as a natural outgrowth of conservative ideology. This fantasy that they live in, that they can totally, everything is going to work out for me if I just completely turn my brain off and let somebody else do all the decisions for me. It's going to be easy. I'm going to be living a soft life. It's like, no, girl, like, you're going to, if you're going to homestead, you're going to be covered in animal poop. If you're going to be at home raising kids, you're going to be covered in puke and various crayons or whatever. And all of your nice clothes are going to get ruined. You know, there's a fake version of this fantasy of what it means to be a woman in a world where they're second-class citizens that is just completely based on what they wish was real. It's all like fanfic. Right. It's not a reflection of reality at all. Okay, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, more hysteria. Hysteria is brought to you by Helix. Hot summer nights are upon us. Are you prepared? I am, thanks to my Helix. It has cooling upgrades so I can get the best rest, even on hot nights. When it comes to customizing your specific sleep needs, Helix is here to help. Here's how it works. The Helix Sleep Quiz matches you with a perfect mattress based on your personal preferences and sleep needs. Then Helix delivers your mattress right to your door with free shipping in the U.S. Then you can rest easy with seamless returns and exchanges. The Happy with Helix guarantee offers a risk-free, customer-first experience designed to ensure you're completely satisfied with your new mattress. They have a 120-night sleep trial and limited lifetime warranty. I've had my Helix for a while now, and every summer I'm thankful for its cooling features. Every time I travel and have to sleep in another bed, I remember just how good I have it. I get really sweaty in hotel beds. It's true. My mattress gives me full body support and keeps my temperature regulated for a great night's sleep every single night. But it's not just me. A study conducted found that 82% of those involved saw an increase in their deep sleep cycle while sleeping on a Helix mattress. Go to helixsleep.com/hysteria for 20% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/hysteria for 20% off site-wide. helixsleep.com/hysteria. Hysteria is brought to you by Jones Road Beauty. 90% of the time, I prefer the light makeup look. I don't want makeup to erase my face. I want it to bring out the features I like. That's why I'm obsessed with the Jones Road Beauty Miracle Balm. It actually enhances my skin instead of masking it with layers of makeup. It replaces multiple steps in my routine. I use it as a highlighter, bronzer, blush, and lip tint. It's the ultimate no-fuss multitasker. No brushes, no complicated routine. I just use my fingers and go to get that my skin but better glow in under 60 seconds. And yeah, yes, I use it before every Hysteria recording, so you've all seen it in action. The best part of Jones Road Beauty, all of their products are actually good for your skin. Every formula is packed with skin-loving ingredients. All Jones Road formulas are clean and high-performing, PEGs, EDTA, BPA, and a whole lot of other things I can't pronounce free. Because clean beauty is a no-brainer. Every once in a while, I still want a little more coverage just without going back to full complicated makeup routine. I mean, it's not 2016, right? And Jones Road actually just launched their foundation stick that even foundation stick skeptics will love. This skincare forward foundation delivers buildable, real coverage while feeling completely weightless on your skin. You'll love how it gives you medium to full coverage without ever looking cakey or heavy. It's dermatologist tested and packed with skin-loving ingredients like ceramide, squalane, and sodium hyaluronate to nourish while you wear it. And the finish is just really natural. Not too matte, not too dewy, just smooth, even, healthy-looking skin. Available in 30 shades to match a wide range of skin tones. Modern day makeup that's clean, strategic, and multifunctional for effortless routines. For a limited time, our listeners are getting a free full-size mascara on their first purchase when they use the code HYS at checkout. Just head to jonesroadbeauty.com and use code HYS at checkout. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them that we sent you. And welcome back to Hysteria, the Serena Williams of podcasts. I can't call myself the Serena Williams of anything. But we have been around for a long time. We have been around for quite some time, 8 years.
Yeah.
8 years.
And still going strong. And I think I heard you do a "ugh" between our segments. So,
oh yeah,
that's my Serena impression.
I do that every time I make a big when I make a big hit. You can sometimes hear in the background. Yes. They have to turn off my mic, and the sound engineers have to like edit around my grunting.
I know. I'm getting a peek behind the curtain, and it's fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. No, the magic could not work without these amazing support staff people that are working for Crooked and not in front of the camera. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that. Let's talk about Serena Williams for a second. 3 weeks ago, Serena Williams announced her return to professional tennis after a nearly four-year break. You are not too old to chase your dreams.
Absolutely not.
Especially if you're Serena Williams. This week, she announced she accepted the wild card invitation for women's singles at Wimbledon. She'll also play doubles with her sister Venus, also on a wild card invitation. Tennis fans. Any tennis fans here? You tennis
love
fans?
Tennis.
I played during the pandemic. I had like 2 seconds.
And we
I
all
was
did.
I will say I was calling myself Pluto Williams, the the sister that no one knows about. But I'm not very good.
Pluto Williams.
I know. Not everyone
That's
will get
amazing.
That joke. It's very
Venus.
Dumb. Thank you very much. But yeah, no, I do occasionally watch sports, but I'm not a big sports person. But I will say I am so inspired by what they've done for the sport. Mm-hmm. And they've completely revitalized it, made people talk about it in a way that they hadn't before. Mm-hmm. And yes, as a Black woman, it is really special to see these two sisters infiltrate a historically white sport mm-hmm. and completely change the game and open the door for a Naomi Osaka, for example, mm-hmm. And just really inspire other young women to get involved in the sport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tennis is great unless you have bad
I
knees.
Love tennis.
Unless you have bad knees. It's not good for your knees.
Yeah, we can't all be Meg the Stallion. So
tennis is the sport that I just do not understand. And it's not because I haven't I'm just like, I can watch it. I'm like, okay, this is fun. This is interesting. But it just, there's a knowledge gap for me.
Yeah, I can't do the actual scoring situation, but I did get I wasn't great, but it was really fun. I had this moment, especially as an art kid, realizing sports, if you practice, you get better. I never understood that before. And I could see myself getting better at tennis. Uh-huh. And I was realizing this really is a repetition thing. I understand now.
Oh, my God.
When we were growing up, I am old enough that Wimbledon used to preempt all daytime television because there was no cable. So you had no choice but to watch tennis. And so I was like, I'm going to be a tennis star. Mm-hmm. And then I took tennis lessons. And guys, I was not good, but I still love to watch.
Amazing. All right. Francesca, you have a story you wanted to talk about. Why don't you tee us off?
All right. So I'm back to talk about AI. I guess this is my beat here on the show. In 2006, Peter Thiel founded Dialogue, an exclusive invitation-only organization that hosts annual off-the-record retreats. So for 20 years, they have been extremely secretive about its members and its programming. The organization allegedly has no partisan agenda. That is, if you consider the ruthless pursuit of power nonpartisan. Now new reporting has exposed some of what's been going on behind the scenes at Dialogue, including a deep preoccupation with the future of artificial intelligence. So last week, a Swiss hacktivist revealed a directory of names in the Dialogue's website code on Blue Sky. The list includes many recognizable names you might expect, like Jared Kushner and Elon Musk, but also some that you may find more surprising. Democrats like Cory Booker and Wes Moore. There are also some media figures like CEO of The Atlantic, Nick Thompson, and The New York Times, Ezra Klein, and some actors like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Josh Brolin, and Sophia Bush. All of these names were published and leaked without clarification of these figures' affiliation with Dialogue.
Okay.
And this is where the drama has ensued.
Okay.
Because the list was released without any context. So, of course, people jumped to conclusions about what it all means. And Sophia Bush came under particular fire because, though many on the list seemed in proper company, what was this progressive actress advocate doing?
Yeah, that was a top question that I had as well.
Yes, and I'm really proud of Sophia because she took to Instagram and she said, what you're not about to do is sully my name. And she defended herself by saying that she was promoting her 2023 documentary about deepfake pornography, Another Body. Oh. And so in doing so, she took every single opportunity she could to serve as a counter voice to the AI optimists. And she also emphasized that Peter Thiel was not in attendance while she was there. So Wired magazine acquired a list of 222 attendees at the Dialogue retreat, which includes registrants, special talents that they had, their relationship status.
Special talents, like I can balance a spoon on my nose?
It's very weird. I guess that they have like a matchmaking service.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I guess AI does it all, I guess, in this respect. Some of their scheduled sessions included Money Does Buy Happiness, Bring Back Nuclear, Navigating World War III, Battlefield Technologies, and How's Your Sex Life? I think we know the answer to that last one. I don't need a panel for that one.
Oh, wow. Claire just chimed in. They also listed talents like funhouse construction was one of the talents that they listed.
What does that mean?
Accent imitation.
Yeah, no, that feels very racist.
I
don't like that.
We're not doing it. We're not doing that. Backcountry skiing. Oh, great for you. Urban exploration.
Yeah.
Isn't that just getting lost in various cities and figuring out how to find the bus?
I don't know. I feel like that's also like a fancy way to describe going to Burning Man.
Yeah. Like, well, no, this is the fancy way to describe going into Burning Man. Meditative and psychedelic inquiry into the nature of reality is one of the skills. Oh, boy. Just say you're on shrooms. Compassion and existential dread. Dinner parties, keeping secrets, and remembering birthdays. Those are special skills that people listed.
Remembering birthdays.
Yeah. Hmm. Compassion is a special skill. Like, I really think that speaks volumes about the people in this cohort. My question for you guys is, you know, how harshly should we be looking at people that attend these conferences? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we go to events all of the time, and I can say personally, I've gone to South by Southwest a number of times. I cannot tell you who founded South by Southwest. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like these attendees are being held to a higher standard, especially considering Sophia Bush was one of them?
Mm-hmm. Do you want to know my theory?
Huh.
My theory is that people love yelling at people who they think are going to care about being yelled at.
Okay.
So, mm-hmm. like, that's why there's so much more attention and anger from progressives and leftists and liberals focused on Democrats whenever something goes wrong, because a couple Democrats peel off and join Republicans rather than focusing on the Republicans, because Republicans don't care.
Right.
You know, I think, like, Peter Thiel, Jared Kushner doesn't care. If you like, you motherfucker,
you
slimy motherfucker, he doesn't care. Sophia Bush cares deeply. And I think people just want to feel like they're making an impact with their like keyboard warrioring.
Yeah.
It was interesting though, too. There are a couple things. First of all, when I look through the list of people, not for nothing, it's almost the exact same list of people who go to Davos, who go to the World Economic Forum every year. So I thought that I was like, okay. But then when they said that one of the sessions was sex cults, and I was like, well, is that like a yay or a nay? Like, mm-hmm. Where are they on the sex cults?
Yeah.
But I think that like, that when I went through and I tried to, I was like, okay, like Wes Moore, I believe Wes Moore to be a good person. Why was he there? And guess what? He did respond to Guardian's inquiry. And he said, you know what? I know that none of those people grew up knowing anybody like me when I grew up. And so I attended and I gave a speech and I never went back again. I got no issue with that. Yeah. That seems totally fucking
like
fine.
Like if you're not at the table, you're on the menu kind of.
Exactly.
A
yeah.
And so I think like, look, guys, would I go to TPUSA? Absolutely. I would love to see what goes on at a
can
TPUSA.
Can we go? Can we
yes,
go next year?
I would
year?
Love to go.
A hysteria field trip sounds actually
to
really
right?
funny.
To USA? Yeah.
But that to me, so it's like, I guess it's about whether you're in on the joke or not, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the hard thing to suss. Like you look through this list, you're like, okay, Jared's going because he thinks that he's like the tastemaker. But like Ezra Klein's there because Jared Kushner, you're actually a subject he's studying.
Or Ezra Klein's there because he's maybe –
I guess, yeah. So,
yeah.
Let's put it this way. The guy from A24, he was studying Jared Kushner as a subject.
Well, and you know, A24 just announced that they're doing this big AI partnership yeah. that has kind of gotten a lot of blowback. I think what's really interesting is we've seen this big, like, girl bossification of AI. Mm-hmm, and we've mm-hmm. seen women like Reese Witherspoon and Mel Robbins and Sheryl Sandberg repeat this idea of, like, women, you have to get involved with AI. You're going to get left behind. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, here's Sophia Bush actually getting involved in a meaningful mm-hmm. way. And she's saying, look, there are a lot of risks here when it comes to deepfakes. Her documentary is about a college student who finds out that there is deepfake pornography of her. She's also been very actively in support of the Defiance Act, which mm-hmm. would, you know, give women the ability and truly anyone who's been a victim of this technology, the ability to take legal action against the people who've distributed this kind of content. So we need a voice like Sophia Bush in the room. Mm-hmm. And in a way that is actually pushing back and saying, you know, we need legislation. There are real victims that stand to be harmed by this technology rather than, you know, pushing undisclosed ads, Reese Witherspoon, as you're like, mm-hmm. you know, making a smoothie in your kitchen, like this amorphous, like women need to get involved when the reality is there are real consequences to this technology. And if you want to use it, you should do whatever you're going to do. But I think we have to have real conversations about who profits from this technology mm-hmm. and how it's being misused, because we keep seeing it over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that the technology is free right now, that should be a red flag. Mm-hmm. Like if it's free, it's because we are the product, mm-hmm. right? And
right.
so I commend Sophia Bush. I'm really glad that she said something because, you know, the narratives were being spun. And I think it's irresponsible for an outlet to put out this information and leave it up to the audience to come up with their own interpretations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I think it's, first of all, I'm never going to trust Sheryl Sandberg again with anything that she ever recommends. I do not trust that woman. Mel Robbins also, I don't know if she's necessarily.
Mel Robbins is like, upload your bank statements to ChatGPT and let it look at, you know, put together a budget for you. I'm like, no, thank you.
Yeah, there's like, I think there are ways to safely engage with AI. And I think that given the ubiquity of the products in our daily lives and how much are being pushed on us, sometimes in places where it's the only option suddenly, I think becoming literate on how to use it and how to be safe with it, like turn off data training, there's certain things that you can do. You can't 100% guarantee that whatever company you're engaging with is going to be respectful and that your data isn't eventually going to be sold at fire auction to some other entity, a la like 23andMe or whatever the DNA right. company was that ended up getting sold in bankruptcy. But I do think like the idea that it's like, yeah, you have to use it for doing normal things that you didn't need it for before. It's like,
no, you don't.
No, you don't. You really don't. I think,
feel like I'm being pushed drugs. It's like I'm trying to write an email. It's like, do you want help? You want help writing the email?
It's like no, I've done it for 30 years. I'm good.
I don't need help. Like, yeah. I like writing.
Yeah. One thing I will say about AI is that I've started using Claude to help with research, and I pay for a version of Claude. And I ask it very specific. I've had bad luck with other versions of it, but with the paid version of it, if I'm like, I want to find an archived version of this article from 1967, it will find it. Or it'll like find out where I can look for it. So that for me, if I'm doing research, and I get really in the weeds sometimes where it's like, I need to find the actual text of this lawsuit. I need to find this primary source. And it's good for that. But it took me a really long time to figure out like, is this even helpful? Like, is this doing anything or is it just creating more work for me? And that's the only way and also like organizing stuff.
Yeah, there's a content creator that I really like that I was genuinely surprised when she talked about how she's been using Claude. And for example, when she went to Coachella, she filmed a bunch of content and she asked Claude to like go through and organize it for her to say like, well, when was I in my hotel? When was I? And that's like the laborious type of stuff where I was like, okay, that makes sense to me. I could understand why she used it that way rather than generating footage that didn't exist. Or, you know, unfortunately, inventing quotes sometimes. That's a thing that AI has been known to do is like straight up hallucinate. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do think you have to go and double check your work. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I don't think the average person that's using it is using it in that way. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are using it to, you know, skip to the last step of having something created. Mm-hmm. And I worry, you know, I talked about this last time, I worry about the jobs that we are potentially going to see disappear. Mm-hmm. But the thing that Sophia Bush has brought up in this documentary, and I think about as an actor and somebody that's a public person, is that, you know, my image and my likeness is on the internet. Mm-hmm. And I don't want someone to use it to promote a product, to misrepresent who I am, to confuse my audience. Mm-hmm. And I am a small fry by compared to some of the people that I know really have to worry about this. And the amount of deep faked, non-consensual sexual images, this is something that a lot of people are dealing with.
Yeah.
And I think, unfortunately, people aren't going to see it as a problem until you lose your job because a video has come up that you are saying it's not me, or you get arrested for something and suddenly there's evidence there and it really looks like you, but you have no way to prove that it's not you. Mm-hmm. I think it's all fun and games now, but we really need to be serious about taking action to make sure that we put some guardrails in place because it's here. I get it. Like, that's the thing that everyone keeps saying, you can't do anything about it. Okay, we can do things to make sure that we protect ourselves and each other from this technology being used in these harmful ways.
Mm-hmm. All right. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sani Petty. Hysteria is brought to you by Hexclad. All right, ladies, summer's officially here. And if you're upgrading anything this season, let it be your kitchen because summer cooking moves fast. Easy dinners, last minute guests, backyard meals, and cookware that needs to keep up with all of it. So if you're still using those scratched, peeling, mismatched pans you've been hanging on to for way too long, this is your sign to finally upgrade because the last thing you need this summer is food sticking, pans burning, or spending forever at the sink when you could be outside enjoying the night. Hexclad combines the performance of stainless steel with the convenience of nonstick, so you don't have to choose. You get incredible heat control, a proper sear, and easy cleanup every time. Most cookware makes you compromise. Nonstick wears out fast and scratches easily. Stainless steel performs beautifully, but cleanup can be a nightmare. Hexclad gives you both performance and convenience. Oh, I love my Hexclad pans. I love them so much. My husband cooks a lot of eggs, and eggs are notoriously hard to get off of many types of pans. And it's really easy to clean my Hexclad pans. They're super easy. They look nice. I mean, that's not the most important thing, but they look nice. They're also dishwasher safe. And I mean, if you're a busy person and you don't want to be leaning over a sink scrubbing out a stainless steel pan, Hexclad is definitely where you should be looking. They're also oven safe up to 900 degrees. perfect for one-pot meals that require a little finish in the oven. There's also Stay Cool stainless steel handles so you're not grabbing a scorching hot pan every time you cook. With over 1 million customers and over 50,000 five-star reviews, the secret is out. There's a reason Gordon Ramsay uses HexClad at home and in his restaurants, and he's the toughest critic on the planet. All HexClad products come with a lifetime warranty, and it's literally the last set of pots and pans you'll ever have to buy. So whether you're hosting all summer long or just want to make everyday cooking feel easier, this is the upgrade your kitchen deserves. For a limited time, our listeners get 10% off with our exclusive link. Just head to hexclad.com/hysteria. Support our show and check them out at hexclad, hexclad.com/hysteria. Make sure to tell them we sent you.
Queen Carvania stood haloed by the morning sun. An army hung on her every word.
My champions, I have sold my chariot on Carvana. 'Twas a lovely SUV, an inexplicably queenly offer. They're even coming to the castle to collect it. Tonight, we feast!
An offer you can feast on. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
And welcome back. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people that burst out laughing when Kenzie of Love Island said that she was not lustful. I don't know if anybody else is watching Love Island. It is a lustful show. It is people doing lustful things, making out for challenges in bikinis, slow-mo shots of like bright colored
slime.
Love
Island.
I support your decision to watch Love Island, but because I don't want the internet to be mad at me, I cannot say anything further about that show.
It's a bad show. It's a bad show. It's a bad show full of dummies.
People love it. People love it. But I also think that it is emblematic of the fact that we want fluff right now. Like,
yeah.
The world is a mess and people want to see hot people making out and they want to be involved in other
Listen,
people's drama.
You guys know that I'm doing Thunderstruck in the bathroom every morning.
Is okay. that a drug?
What is that?
It's the, see, different side of reality TV. That would be the number that the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders do at every game. They're back, new season. Kelly is being her most Kelly. But you see, you guys watch people who are sexed up, and I watch middle-aged women being
No. No, to be fair, I do not watch it. And then
that was the dumbest thing you watch.
I don't like dumb things.
No. Blessing.
No, you know what my dumb thing is?
What?
Is I sit on Threads and I like show up in random comment sections in like family drama where somebody like accidentally has their Facebook linked to their Threads account and then they post.
Oh,
like,
I've seen that.
Like, listen here, if you take the side of so and so, you're not coming to my wedding. And I'm like, oh, I'm seated. What's happening? And I'm just reading through all of the comments and seeing what the messy drama is. I love that stuff.
Oh my God, that is really dumb.
See, you're trolling for the show you could make.
Oh my God. Okay, well, before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. The Supreme Court is about to break for summer vacation, and it seems like they're working up until the very last minute on some of the biggest decisions of our lives. Birthright, citizenship, trans athletes, absentee ballots, and more. It's a lot. Every Monday, constitutional law professors Kate, Melissa, and Leah make the confusing chaos of the legal system easier to understand as they break down the most consequential decisions and legal battles. Check out Strict Scrutiny and keep an eye on your feed for emergency episodes when big opinions come out. Watch on YouTube or listen wherever you get your podcasts. Also, Melissa and I did Assembly Required this
week.
Oh,
yeah.
So you can hear us a Strict Hysteria crossover episode with me and Melissa if you check out Assembly Required. Okay, now let's get to Sandy Petty. I'm going to go first. This week, the Washington Post published an expose about Tulsi Gabbard. It's an excellent story. In the story, the Post reveals that there are communications between Gabbard and mysterious figures in this religious organization that she was raised in called the Science of Identity Foundation that reveal that somebody within the organization was essentially dictating to Gabbard how she should act as DNI and throughout her political career. Now, not to toot our own horn here, but we did an episode of This Fucking Guy about Tulsi Gabbard that was 90% about the weird yoga cult that her family raised her in at the Science of Identity Foundation. We kind of made the like sideways point that we think that Tulsi Gabbard is not doing everything. She's not making all the decisions. Anyway, thank you, Washington Post, for reporting on this incredible story.
For listening to This Fucking Guy
and taking
the ball and running.
No, you know what? If the reporter listened to this fucking guy and was like, you know what? I really want to look into that. Then good for them.
Great. Perfect.
If it was a totally independent thing that happened, completely independent of this fucking guy, amazing.
I think they should give you credit. I think that that's the that's the petty, right? Like, you're happy that the report happened, mm-hmm. but, like, just give us a little, give us a like.
I think we might have, like, nudged it up closer to the surface. There was some amazing local reporting in Hawaii going on about this organization.
Mahalo.
Yes. And so there's, like, been a lot of people who have kind of, like, pulled at this thread before, but this is the biggest story so far because it happens at the very end of Tulsi's tenure as the director of National
Intelligence. I mean, this article is fucking crazy.
It is a bananas article.
Cause and effects, her texts and emails with this man and actions that she took the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, it's insane.
It is really like she was being puppet mastered by her guru, who it's all very strange. But that's why we don't elect cult members to do anything or vote to confirm them when they are nominated for cabinet level positions. No, lesson
just
learned,
pick someone
right?
else.
We'll never
just
have to worry about it. We'll never have to worry about a person being beholden to a weird religious figure ever again.
No, never.
Never.
Fingers crossed.
Pete Hegseth and that guy, the bearded.
Oh, Reverend.
Doug
What's
Wilson.
His name? Doug Wilson.
His head is like 95% beard. I don't know. When I picture him, I just picture him like a beard with like little eyes. I don't know. Alyssa, what is your Sani Petty this week?
Okay. Did you guys happen to catch the chatter yesterday about Donald Trump and the new drug, Retatrutide? Did you see any of this?
Oh, the peptide story. Yes.
What's going on with peptides?
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what I think is so funny about this story. So there's some news organization called Stat, which I'd never heard of before, prints this article that says they had three sources that claimed Retatrutide was given compassionate use single patient trial, which is extremely rare, usually because of a terminal illness, not yet FDA approved, to a 79-year-old man, one, with obesity in the DC area. And everyone starts being like, who could it be? Who could it be? It's Trump, Trump, Trump. Now, the thing about this drug is that it is like Mounjaro on steroids. It is supposed to give bariatric surgery level results. And so all these news organizations start calling HHS and the White House, but they're not giving comment. They're not giving comment, not giving comment. Finally, hours later, they're like, little Caroline gets out on stage and she's like, stop, he's not on the drug. Now, do you want my theory about what happened?
What happened? What's your theory?
My theory is that the CEO of Eli Lilly called the White House and was like, you fucking tell them you are not on this goddamn drug. This drug promises bariatric surgery level results.
And he's not having
the results.
And
you've nearly lost a pound.
Yeah.
Yes. I was like, there is no, so obviously we never trust anything that the White House says, but I spun a really funny tale in my head about like the CEO of Eli Lilly trying to get them on the phone being like, shut this down, shut this down, because Trump can't even lose weight on the most intense of the GLP-1s.
I've seen a lot of fitness influencers pushing these peptides and saying that it does, they do all sorts of things, but they have like crazy side effects, and you know, you essentially have to inject yourself every day. You have to buy them on like the
online
from like a
well, because there
weird...
are so many,
yeah,
right? It's like I saw a comedian talking about doing all of her peptides. They were things I'd never heard of before.
Yeah,
there were like seven of them, and she injects herself.
GLP-1s are a peptide. GLP-1s are a peptide.
GLP-1s are peptide.
I mean, and they are very promising. But there's a really good episode of Science Versus about peptides. I love Science Versus. It like kind of attacks like a scientific related topic. Tons of citations, which I love. But they do a peptides article or episode, and I think it came out 2 or 3 weeks ago, but definitely required listening if you're like, what's the deal with peptides?
Yeah, they're suddenly everywhere.
Also, Wendy Zukerman is the host, and she's got this delightful Australian accent. It sounds like she's chewing on every word, and she's just having a great time. I absolutely love that pod.
These are the kinds of details that I look for when I'm deciding what to listen to next.
Yeah.
So
Arnor! A podcast! But anyway, no, I have a bad Australian accent. But yeah, it's pretty crazy. The I heard, Alyssa, that there were stories kind of swirling around in the last couple of years that Trump was on a different weight loss drug that's available to everybody.
Which would make sense.
Yeah, but he wasn't losing weight.
Well, the thing is I think a lot of people incorrectly assume that these weight loss drugs are like miracle drugs.
And they work
for
everybody.
And that they work for everyone and that you don't actually have to do anything. Mm-hmm. And what I've learned from people that I know that have taken them is like you still need to watch your diet. You still need to, you know, get more protein, which is why I think everything is injecting protein. It's like Dunkin' Donuts protein donut. Like, what's going on? Yeah. So you need to get more protein to make up for muscle loss. You need to be active. Like, you still need to put the work in. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't see any results because Donald Trump is not someone who's going to put in any work.
Yeah. Remember, Aaron, we did have a bit of a conspiracy theory because he did look thinner around Butler when he got shot.
Yeah.
And then he wasn't. And then we were like, why? What contraindicates a GLP-1? And it was a congestive heart failure.
Yeah.
So we were like, okay, that's what's happening. Yeah.
I think it also it doesn't work forever for everybody. There are people who are like, who go on it and then they hit like a plateau.
You hit a plateau.
And then they just can't lose anymore. So I think he might be one of those people. Also probably, doesn't want to do any work. All right. Francesca, sanity corner or feeling petty this week?
Oh, I'm feeling petty, and I want to highlight this Criminal Minds Evolutions actress, Paget Brewster. She got into a little squabble on Twitter, I refuse to call it X, where she told a journalist, "You suck," because she dared to write a review about the show. And the real irony is that the review wasn't critical of the show at all. It was actually saying that the shortened season run was really hurting the show because they weren't able to explore some of the storylines more in-depthly. So essentially she was saying, you guys should have more episodes.
I want more of this
show. I want to see more of it.
Oh my gosh.
And instead, this actress just kind of like flew off the handle and she posted something saying, you know, you don't realize this because you're young, like talking down to the journalist to say that like if you post a negative review about a show, you can, you know, make people lose their jobs. And she's since had to walk it back. And I just
think... Wait, the journalist had to walk it
back? No, the actress.
Oh, okay, I was
going to say. The actress, yeah. She came out and she apologized for you know, going off the handle about this article. It was just very strange because she has now brought herself and the show more attention by highlighting a review that, again, was complimentary of the show and said, I really want to see this show flourish and have more episodes. And unfortunately, I think this is emblematic of an issue we're seeing with a lot of creative people on social media. Y'all need to get group chats. Like, you know, you're allowed to feel your feelings. As a creative person, I know how frustrating it is when someone says something negative about your work. I have, you know, seen people say weird things about me. I'm sure you have too, Aaron. And you have that like little twinge of, I want to say something. Mm-hmm. That's when you go to the group chat and you feel your feelings there. And or you say like, should I post about this? And they say, no, girl, don't do it. You know, send us an 8-minute voice note instead. Don't post this on the internet. Because again, the condescension here of telling her that people are going to lose their jobs because of your review. And now I wouldn't be surprised if the producers or the studio gave her a call and said, girl, you need to take that tweet down because you are getting us bad press. All because a reviewer did her job.
Oh, my God.
And unfortunately, I've dealt with this myself. We've seen this with authors. We've seen this with a director who will remain nameless, lest he slide in my DMs because he's not happy that I reviewed his movie.
What?
But I will say that, like, this is a pervasive problem. And it is okay for people to talk about the work that you put out into the world. Not everybody is going to like it. And that is okay. And it doesn't mean that the person is, you know, I think there's a difference between a personal attack.
Right.
And, like, rightful critique. And
totally.
I think that if somebody crosses the line, I can understand why someone wants to stand up for themselves, but especially when you are in a position of power, whether you're an actress, a director, or an author, you essentially have more to lose. And there's a power imbalance there where you're essentially sending your audience to go dogpile on this person mm-hmm. in your defense. Mm-hmm. And once you ring that bell, you cannot unring it. Mm-hmm. So bring back group chats and journals. Unless the journal factory burned down, y'all got to do those morning pages. You know, you gotta put it on the page and leave it there.
Yeah, great advice. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of Hysteria. Francesca Ramsey, thank you so much for joining us for the whole episode.
Thank you for having me.
Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for being my ride or die this week and every week. Listeners, if you want to get in touch, we love hearing from you. Hysteria@crooked.com is the way to do that. No hysteria next week, but we will be back the following week. And in the intervening time, there will be something special for you dropping on the feed. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Our show is produced by Caroline Reston, Claire Fogarty, Kendra James, Adrian Hill, Alyssa Mastromonaco, and me, Erin Ryan. Our team includes Matt DeGroat, Rachel Gajewski, Delon Villanueva, Claudia Sheng, Mia Kelman, Jay Banks, Charlotte Landis, and Jordan Cantor. Our staff is proudly unionized with the Writers Guild of America East.